But you can't have them because that's bad for the planet. That is not fair. That is discriminatory. And that is not sustainable. But that was the attitude that they were working from. And the documentation for that is everywhere. There was a letter written by representatives of several of these emerging economies saying, what the heck are you doing? Like, this is patently unfair. There were arguments that broke out during the meetings to figure out the Kyoto Accords, saying we can't just write off, you know, 2/3 of the world population and say they can't move into the 21st century because it's bad for the climate. But that's what the industrialized nations were saying. They were saying you can't have any of what we have, because that was their solution. Was they send us the fuel, we use it to pollute the planet, and the people who live in those emerging economies get to continue enjoying, I guess, an idyllic, pre-industrial existence. That was the solution. And that was the point where I started to have a real problem with climate science and the politics of climate science. Privately, I've had a lot of conversations about this with people, some of whom are very, very concerned about the climate, some of whom are not. And inevitably, it comes back to a single point. And the point that I keep bringing it back to, that my smarter, more intelligent friends will acknowledge, is that sooner or later population control has to enter into the equation. Now, the naive people who think we're going to do it by banning plastic and hugging the polar bears and planting a tree don't believe that. Okay, they think they're going to be able to have as many kids as they want, and kids are great, and all the rest of that. We have the celebrity climate activists who are taking their private jets all over the place for the latest Instagram photo op. They're useless. They're worthless. But this question of population control is one that I always bring up. Because, ultimately, if you want to reduce man's impact on the environment, you need to reduce man. We need fewer of us. And lo and behold, in the journal Bioscience, we have an article. This is a statement co-signed by more than 11,000 scientists from around the world, climate scientists. Warning of a climate emergency. And it begins. Scientists have a moral obligation to clearly warn humanity of any catastrophic threat and to tell it like it is. Okay. I'll take that. I don't know that you have a moral obligation to do that. I don't know that the evil scientist is necessarily on the wrong side of history. May or may not be. But I digress. On the basis of this obligation and the graphical indicators presented below, we declare, with more than 11,000 scientists, signatories from around the world, clearly and unequivocally, that planet Earth is facing a climate emergency. Exactly 40 years ago, scientists from 50 nations met at the First World Climate Conference in Geneva, 1979, and agreed that alarming trends for climate change made it urgently necessary to act. Since then, similar alarms have been made through the 1992 Rio Summit, the 1997 Kyoto Protocol, the 2015 Paris Agreement, as well as scores of other global assemblies and scientists' explicit warnings of insufficient progress. Yet greenhouse gas emissions are still rapidly rising, with increasingly damaging effects on the Earth's climate. An immense increase of scale in endeavors to conserve our biosphere is needed to avoid untold suffering due to the climate crisis. And, of course, they cite references in all of this. Not necessarily 100% true. The truth is that humanity actually prospers and does better in a warmer environment than in a colder environment. It is easier for us to survive in a warmer environment than in a colder environment. It is easier for us to grow most of the crops that sustain us in a warmer environment than in a colder environment. So what all this untold suffering is anybody's guess. More people and animals and everything die from the cold than from the heat. What they are really doing, these 11,000 scientists, with this warning, is they are putting together this collection of charts that they have made, all of which move in alarming directions, and trying to position it in much the same way that the doomsday clock has been positioned, as a final arbiter, as the flashing red light telling us that the end is nigh. Now, the thing about the doomsday clock is it's a clock, and it's pretty easy to visualize, you know, whether we are 4 minutes to midnight or 1 minute to midnight, midnight being the moment that nuclear Armageddon is unleashed upon the planet. This is a bunch of charts, and people are going to look at it and be like, it's a bunch of charts, and they're, I don't know what that means. You know, what you really needed was something like a clock. You needed, I don't know what you need. You know, you need a drawing of a tree, and the more leaves that fall off the tree, the closer we are to dying. Nobody's going to buy into this, okay? It's too sciencey as part of the problem. But they go in, but they've got all their charts here, and their charts are all, you know, appropriately alarming. And then they talk about solutions. But before they talk about solutions, they say this: profoundly troubling signs from human activities include sustained increases in both human and ruminant livestock populations. That's a troubling sign. An increase in human population is a troubling sign. Increase in livestock populations is a troubling sign. Per capita meat production, world gross domestic product. An increase in world gross domestic product. An increase in our economic activity, our increase in what we do, is a profoundly troubling sign to these 11,000 scientists. Then they get into things that are actually troubling signs: global tree cover loss, fossil fuel consumption. Then we're back into the number of air passengers carried, carbon dioxide emissions, per capita emissions since 2000. Encouraging signs. Here are the encouraging signs, kids. Include decreases in global fertility rates. Decelerated forest loss in the Brazilian Amazon. Didn't we just spend the late summer with a bunch of people yelling about the forest loss in the Amazon? Oh, nope, that's down. Increases in the consumption of solar and wind power. Institutional fossil fuel divestment. And the proportion of GHG emissions covered by carbon pricing. However, here's the bad news. The decline in human fertility rates has substantially slowed during the last 20 years. And the pace of forest loss in Brazil's Amazon has now started to increase again. Okay, so at least they're caught up with that. Do you understand what they're saying here? Human population growth is a profoundly troubling sign. Encouraging sign is a decrease in global fertility rates. And it's troubling that fertility rates aren't dropping as fast as they'd like them to. In other words, they don't like babies. This is what they're saying. They're saying we need to have less babies. Because, according to their models, the planet cannot handle us. Now, I don't know if this is true or not. I know that when someone sits there and says that decreased human fertility is a good thing, most people are going to have a problem with that. Because we do need to replace ourselves if we want to keep going as a species. That means 2.2 children per couple. Just to keep humanity going, just to keep ourselves alive, because we're going to die. Everyone who's here right now, we're going to die. And the only way we keep humanity going is if we leave enough people behind to keep humanity going. But they say that's a bad thing. Increases in human and livestock population is a troubling sign. That is disturbing. And that should be disturbing to anyone listening to this. Now, that part of it is not what's made the headlines. You've probably heard the headlines about this because the story's making the rounds right now. 11,000 scientists have signed off on global climate emergency. We have a climate emergency. Because what the headlines should say is 11,000 scientists say fertility decline not declining fast enough. Human population growth is a problem. Now, maybe this isn't a problem for you. Maybe you don't want to have kids. What if you do? Do you want a bunch of scientists telling governments we need to limit the population? We're going to decide who can and can't have kids? Because that's where this goes. What you then get is a bunch of politicians sitting around saying, you know, the scientists say there's too many people. We need to curb population growth. Don't believe me? I will read on. They offer some solutions here. The first, and they break them down into different areas. The first is energy. The world must quickly implement massive energy efficiency and conservation practices and must replace fossil fuels with low carbon renewables. Okay. I don't disagree with any of that. Good goals. The problem is we don't have the technology to use low carbon renewables right now. They don't generate enough energy. There isn't enough surface area on the planet, land surface area, with enough sunlight for us to run everything off of solar. That solar power system, that off-grid solar system that you put in your house, take a look at what's in those batteries. Because that's going to be an environmental nightmare a few years from now when those batteries start going dead. And we got to figure out what to do with all the chemicals in those batteries, including heavy metals. There's a reason that battery is so heavy, and it's because it's full of lead. They're arguing for electric cars and things like that. Fine. I'm on board. I don't see them saying anything about telecommuting or work from home or decentralizing workforces, which are immediate concrete steps we could take right now to reduce carbon dioxide emissions. Where's that conversation? They talk about short-lived pollutants. We need to probably reduce the emissions of short-lived climate pollutants, including methane. That's your livestock. It's the farting cows again. Black carbon, which is soot, is from burning fossil fuels, and hydrofluorocarbons. Doing this could slow climate feedback loops, yada, yada, yada. Nature, we must protect and restore Earth's ecosystems. Look, again, not going to disagree with that, okay? One of the major contributors that we have to warming is taking down forest land and replacing it with concrete. You put up cities where there used to be forests, you create heat islands, okay? And we know that this happens. There is no debate on this. Okay, city infrastructure stays hotter during the night than surrounding forest area. It's why it's more pleasant to live in the suburbs during the summertime than it is to live downtown. And we are continually expanding our cities, and we are continually expanding our infrastructure, and we are continually replacing green, which absorbs heat and dissipates heat, with concrete and asphalt and glass, which trap heat and then release it when it gets cooler. We need to plant trees. We need to find different ways of imagining and creating our infrastructure, with an emphasis being on maintaining as much green space as possible. Who says a skyscraper needs to go up? Why can't it go down? Why can't we have our roadways capped with green space? These are things that we should be talking about. These are things that we should be doing. And it's not something like, you know, I-95 through Maine, where there's forest on either side and you've got a ribbon of highway running down the middle of it. That's not so bad. It's when you think about something like Boston and the way that Boston is continually spreading out and merging with the cities around it so that it all turns into this one giant urban infrastructure, limited number of trees area where there is no hope for heat to dissipate during the day. It all gets sucked into these hot surfaces and all gets released at night. And as you increase that surface area, you increase the impact on the environment. Food. Here we go. Eating mostly plant-based foods while reducing the global consumption of animal products, especially ruminant livestock. Man is a carnivore. Man is an omnivore. Our bodies need protein. We are not getting enough of that protein from plants. Stop. Stop. This is where all this vegan nonsense comes from. Everybody needs to be a vegan and we'll solve climate change. No. You know what's going to happen? Everybody goes vegan, we'll all die younger. Okay? Which, by the way, if overpopulation is your problem and we all die younger, that's a way of solving the problem. A healthy human diet includes meat, protein from meat. Doesn't have to be dairy. Okay? We don't have to milk cows. We can just eat them. But man is an omnivore. I know you can subsist on a plant-based diet if you want to, with a lot of vitamin supplements and a lot of care given to getting protein from somewhere. But you're not going to do that on a global scale. Economy. Excessive extraction of materials and overexploitation of ecosystems driven by economic growth must be quickly curtailed to maintain long-term sustainability of the biosphere. All right, if we're talking about getting rid of strip mining, I'm okay with that. If we're talking about getting rid of all mining so that we don't have metal anymore, so that we don't have plastic anymore, how are you going to manufacture anything? You know, these scientists apparently want us to be a bunch of soybean farmers walking around naked. Because that's what's good. Does that work for you? Do you want to grow soybeans in the nude and sleep in a house without any kind of heat or air conditioning made out of, I don't know, you can't make it out of wood because that's bad for the forests. You're not going to have cell phones anymore. You're not going to have the internet. You're not going to have anything. You're going to lose the sum total of human knowledge. And here we get into the good one. Population. Still increasing by roughly 80 million people per year, or more than 200,000 per day. The world population must be stabilized and ideally gradually reduced within a framework that ensures social integrity. There are proven and effective policies that strengthen human rights while lowering fertility rates and lessening the impacts of population growth on greenhouse gas emissions and biodiversity loss. These policies make family planning services available to all people. Fine. Remove barriers to their access. Fine. And achieve full gender equality, including primary and secondary education, as a global norm for all, especially girls and young women. What? Everybody has to go to college, and that's going to solve climate change. Do you understand how loopy this gets? Do you understand now why when somebody brings up climate change and somebody brings up climate science, I immediately get my hackles up? Getting a college education is not going to do anything to stop climate change. It's not. Sending girls to college is not going to stop climate change. Reducing the global population will stop climate change because there will be fewer people. Fewer people means less energy consumption. It means less meat consumption. It means less air travel. It means less everything. It means less traffic getting into the city, so we're not sitting in traffic jams and spewing exhaust into the environment. It means less use of chlorofluorocarbons and hydrocarbons. Means less of all of that. And we used to have a pretty good system in place for keeping our population in check. It was called World Wars, with the occasional pandemic. Well, we've managed to defeat the pandemics. We don't really like having world wars anymore. So we've had unchecked population growth on this planet more or less since 1950. There have been some pockets of genocide here and there along the way. But for the most part, people have been free to have as many kids as they want. And the world population is growing. It is now fashionable in Western society to have fewer children. Particularly in the last 20 or 30 years. So that has brought the population rate down. But in emerging economies, population growth is still pretty strong. They are offsetting the declines in Western civilization. But this is what they're saying. We need to reduce the population. Well, you know what? If you stop mining for materials we need to make things, and if you stop making meat available so that we're all weak, soy-dependent individuals, I assume living naked in a one-room shack somewhere with no power because we've stopped mining to manufacture anything, that will go a long way toward reducing the population. We will all die young. None of this has anything meaningful to do with climate change. The idea that you're going to solve climate change by getting everyone a college education is nonsense. You know who that's good for? Professors. You know what a lot of these climate scientists do for a living? Huh. Would you believe me if I told you they're professors? And you're going to tell me that getting rid of it, if we just stop eating meat. Can I tell you that granted that there were a lot fewer human beings at this point, but when people started making their way into the interior of the United States of America, they were stunned by the populations of buffalo. The populations of buffalo were so heavy that you couldn't move. You had to wait sometimes a day for the buffalo to get out of the way before you could go anywhere. When the first explorers came to our shores by boat, the cod were so thick that they would stop boats dead in the water. You sailed into a shoal of cod, you had to wait for the cod to move on before you could move, because the ship could not make its way through that biomass of cod. Mark Kurlansky's Cod. We'll tell you more about that. Great book. Highly recommend you read it. Some of what they've got here is good. Some of what they've got here is sensible, okay? But we're not going to be eating mostly plant. And I understand they say mostly, okay? They're not saying let's get rid of all meat, right? There does seem to be an acknowledgement here that, you know what? Our bodies need protein. They need meat-based protein. And I understand the need to, you know, we do need to stop deforestation for the sake of livestock. We need to find ways of better utilizing resources. And we need to do something about out-of-control urban, suburban infrastructure that is creating heat islands. We need to plant trees. I'm on board with that. Every solar panel that goes up, every wind turbine that goes up, good luck trying to get one up anywhere because people don't want them. But every solar panel that goes up, every wind turbine that goes up, every methane gas conversion system that goes up, all of this works together to create a cleaner planet. But ultimately, it becomes a question of population. We can be seen right now as simply buying time. And even if you put in everything that they recommend, we are still buying time. The dirty little secret that they have finally admitted to here, that they didn't want to talk about, is that the ultimate solution to the climate problem is less of us. You have to get rid of people because we are the ones that burn the fuel and eat the meat and drive the cars and use the electricity and drive demand that drives carbon emissions, deforestation, loss of carbon absorption, all of those things. People are the problem. So their recommendation, the world population must be stabilized and ideally gradually reduced within a framework that ensures social integrity. What does that look like? Who decides? Who is going to decide who gets to have kids and who doesn't? And do you think society is going to react well to that idea? Did we learn nothing from the example of China, which instituted a one-child policy a few decades ago, subsequently reversed it? And they reversed it for a couple of reasons. One of the reasons being that parents were killing their babies because sons were more valuable in China than daughters. Daughters were being drowned in ponds and rivers because you could only have one child. Do we not see that happening again on a global scale? Is that what these scientists are advocating for? Now, the reality is we need to fundamentally rethink some things. Because what we are doing right now is ruining our planet. And it is ruining the things that we share this planet with. I am ultimately more concerned with the animals than I am with the humans. Because the humans will find some way to take care of themselves and keep going no matter what. The animals will die off if we are not good stewards of them. And I happen to love animals, okay? I love big cats. I love fish. I love birds. I love all of these things. And it breaks my heart to see that plastic is killing them, which is why I do what I can to minimize my use of plastic. And I am completely in favor of getting rid of single-use plastics. You get rid of straws, get rid of the plastic shopping bags, let's get rid of the water bottles, right? There has to be some alternative to that. Other than, you know, carry your own bottle around and, you know, we have to rethink these things. We have to rethink traffic. We could get rid of traffic if we stop making everybody go to an office just so they can be seen to be busy by their boss. We should be looking at decentralized work as a major way of eliminating carbon emissions, particularly in states like California that already have significant problems with smog. We should be taking a hard look at all of the appliances that we have in our homes that never turn off. All these smart devices that are on all the time. Sure, they're energy efficient, but why are they drawing power and consuming energy when no one is using them? Why does Alexa need to be a voice command away? That's one of the great hypocrisies in all of this, right? Is that we've replaced billboards that used to have a couple of lights on them with giant video screens. And I understand that those giant video screens may consume a little bit less electricity in a given night than the old incandescent bulbs did. But those bulbs were only on at night, and the video board is on 24 hours a day. So every one of those video boards uses more energy over its lifetime than the plain billboard did. All these things that we think of as progress, all these things that we think of as moving forward, in some cases are, but in a lot of cases aren't. And before we start talking about population control, before we start talking about how we're going to unwind human population growth within a framework that ensures social integrity, theoretically by sending all the girls to college, let's talk about things we can do today. Let's talk about things that are realistic. This is what's wrong with climate science. Because what we have is a bunch of people sitting around saying, hey, you know, we need fewer people. Yeah, that will solve the climate problem. How are you going to get there? They don't have an answer for that question. They're going to say, hey, it's not my job to answer that question. I'm just telling you we need fewer people. Well, then what do you get? You get politicians seizing on this. What kind of politicians do you think are going to get on board with policies that emphasize population control? What are your worst fears of who might get on board with those kinds of policies? Do we see the rise of white supremacists under the guise of climate? That's what the shooter in New Zealand was about. That was his game. Whether or not he's an actual white supremacist is a question, but he was someone who was concerned about population growth and recognized that as one of the major causes of climate change and decided that shooting non-white people was a good way to help. At the very least, drive the non-white people out of New Zealand so that the white people who were left in New Zealand would have a better environment. This is dangerous. And it's horrifying to think that scientists would say this. Even if they're right, and by the way, it is an accurate statement. The simplest way that you could forestall climate change or stop climate change would be to get rid of half of the world's population. Is anyone going to put forward a proposal for that? I don't think so. I hope not. I don't like my odds. I don't think any of us would like our odds under that scenario. Although we can more or less imagine who would come out on top. You could always have a world war and do it that way. Although wars are very, very bad for the environment. Not only are you burning a lot of fossil fuel, but the kind of war that we're fighting these days, you're probably leaving radioactive waste all over the place, right? This is what the climate activists are about. This is what is lurking in the background of their agenda. Population control. Reducing the human population. This is the kind of thing that, left unchecked, leads to the kind of violence that we've seen in Christchurch, but also leads to greater violence. So when you hear people talking about, 11,000 climate scientists signed off on this thing, ask them if they've read it. And then ask them how we're going to achieve population control. And if that ought to be the first thing that we're looking at. Because I guarantee you, the people who are going to walk around quoting 11,000 scientists haven't read it. I guarantee you they haven't read it. Because most people would read that and be absolutely horrified by it. And say, wait a minute. Well, how much population do we need to get rid of? And how are we going to do that? And why can't I eat meat anymore? And why are there still all these cars on the road? Why do we still have traffic? Why do we have all this infrastructure all over the place that is releasing heat all night long and keeping places warmer at night than they've ever been before? Leading cause of climate change. The solutions that these scientists propose. I'm curious to know how many of the 11,000 plus that signed off on this actually read the statement and knew what it was. And I'm a little surprised that nobody has come out since and said, wait a minute, I never got on board with population control. If we got 11,000 scientists saying we need population control, maybe we do. They're not going to tell us how to do it. Who do you think is? Dangerous idea. Very dangerous idea. And again, everything that they're talking about assumes that emerging economies stay emerging economies. It is discriminatory against those parts of the world that are not yet developed. So we're basically telling 2/3 of the world population, you're going to continue to have nothing. We're going to have less. But the planet will survive. concerning, deeply concerning, distressing, even, that something like this would be published and celebrated by the media. Why? Because the media hasn't read it. They don't know what's in it. They read the headline. Oh, 11,000 scientists have said we have a problem. Okay, what are their solutions? Population control. That should be the headline. 11,000 scientists say we need population control now. 11,000 scientists say infanticide, good for the environment. Reduced fertility rates, good for the environment. You go tell some couple that's been struggling to have a child that reduced fertility rates are good for the planet. Maybe we should just ban IVF, right? Maybe we should just say, you know what? You have a kid normally, you don't have a kid at all. We're sorry. We can't. Too many people. Can't do anything for you. Can you imagine a doctor looking a couple in the eye and saying that? Sorry, you can't have a kid. Can't help you. Too many people. You don't get to have a kid because you're broken. That's what they're talking about. WMFO Medford. Programming note. 3 weeks from tonight, I think, is the 24th, whatever the 26th, whatever the night is before Thanksgiving, Thanksgiving Eve. There will be a special Thanksgiving Eve broadcast. It will be my 15th. And I will not be falling on train tracks and hurting my knees because I'm not going to any Patriots games before then. So it's going to happen. I don't know what format it's going to take yet. I will have more on that next week. I'm kind of in between a couple of ideas here. It may just be me. I may take it right back to the roots of what the show was when it began. I may invite some people in. Haven't really decided how that's going to go yet. So I'll have more on that. But there will be a Thanksgiving Eve show for those who have come to know and love it. So stick around for that Wednesday night before Thanksgiving here on WMFO Medford. If you're a fan of Donald Trump, you probably, there was a great piece, CNN did a town hall with some folks, and they asked this one woman, you know, would you vote for Donald Trump if he shot somebody on Fifth Avenue? And someone else in this town hall put up their hand and said, depends on why he shot them. And the woman that they were asking questions to said, yeah, it depends on why he shot him. I might vote for him if he shot somebody on Fifth Avenue. So that tells you, you know, how hardcore the people who support Donald Trump, some of them, can be. I've never seen this happen before. In the meantime, we have the impeachment. And big development in the impeachment yesterday. What do you mean this site can't be reached? It's AP News. Gordon Sondland, who was U.S. ambassador to the European Union, came forward before the House and changed his testimony and said that there was, in fact, a quid pro quo with Ukraine. Sondland told, and these are in documents that have been released from the hearings that have taken place behind closed doors. Sondland told the House investigators that, man, I don't know why any of this is, that there had in fact been a quid pro quo between the Trump administration and Ukraine. That the U.S. military aid and a visit that the Ukrainian president wanted to have at the White House would be tied to Ukraine's willingness to investigate the Bidens and investigate this purported server that had Hillary Clinton's emails on it. This is a big deal because everyone has set up to this point that there was no quid pro quo. Trump has said that. So to have the ambassador to the European Union come out and say, yeah, I was told to tell the Ukrainians no military aid unless you investigate the Bidens. That's the quid pro quo, clearly. So in looking at the possibility of impeachment, we have to ask a couple of questions. First, did Donald Trump do the thing that he's accused of doing? According to Sunland, yes, he did the thing. He sent a message at the behest of the president, because Sunland is not, going rogue. He's not making this decision on his own, and is in fact a strong supporter of Donald Trump, but not to the point that he's willing to perjure himself. Sunland came out and said, look, I went to Ukraine and said, if you want your military aid, you're going to investigate the Bidens. So let us assume, for the sake of argument, that Trump did the thing. Okay. Trump tied military aid to investigative action by the Ukrainian government. Joe Biden did the same thing. All right. Joe Biden is on record, on tape. I'm going to pull it out at some point if this keeps coming up, bragging about how he held up military aid, U.S. aid, in front of a delegation of Ukrainian diplomats, unless they agreed to stop investigating his son. He actually wanted to call off an investigation into Burisma, which was the company that his son sat on the board of directors of, for reasons known only to Burisma. Because Hunter Biden was not qualified to have that job. Bad optics. When you have the Vice President of the United States saying, no military aid unless you stop investigating my son. Bad optics when you have the President of the United States saying, no military aid unless you investigate the Bidens, who, by the way, are my political rivals. Seems like the same crime. If this is, in fact, a crime. And that is the second question. The second question is, does this rise to the level of an impeachable offense? Now, I was not at the Constitutional Convention. I had not been born yet. A relative of mine, I believe, was there. Elbridge Gerry. And the Founding Fathers, when they were writing the articles of impeachment, when they were coming up with this concept, were very divided on it. Alexander Hamilton was concerned that it would become a political weapon. And he was dissuaded from that opinion, and a majority of them agreed to this part of the U.S. Constitution that would allow you to remove a president. I don't believe that asking a foreign government to help you dig up political dirt on a rival was what they had in mind. I believe they were looking at removing a president in case he decided to suspend the constitutional rights of a large number of Americans, or in case he decided to hand our sovereignty to a foreign nation. Not do an investigation or, you know, get your military aid. I don't think that quite rises to the level of a high crime. Maybe a high misdemeanor. I don't know if the misdemeanors need to be high or not. They're high crimes and misdemeanors. So maybe it's a high misdemeanor. But that's the second question. Is this an impeachable offense? Now, a majority of Americans, according to latest tracking polls, say, yes, he should be impeached. Yes, he should be removed from office. And what is potentially concerning about this, if you are Donald Trump, or if you are a Trump supporter, is that a majority of independents are on board with this. When we look at those numbers, again, the number you want to remember is 30, 30, 40. As I've explained, 30% of the country, and these are rough numbers, but they're handy estimates. 30% of the country, Democrat, 30% of the country, Republican, 40% of the country, independent. It's roughly how it breaks down. So to get 52% of the country saying that the president should be removed from office, you need 22% of the moderates, assuming that you have 100% of Republicans or 100% of Democrats. In this case, they actually have 8% of Republicans. So that is a smaller percentage of moderates that you need, but it is still a majority of moderates. And when the majority of moderates sides with one party or the other, that is generally going to give you the outcome of any political question in the United States of America. The Sondland testimony is bad news in that it more or less establishes the grounds for the House of Representatives to move forward with an impeachment hearing and the impeachment process. They are very likely going to come up with articles of impeachment that they will deliver to the Senate. The question will become, did anything that the president do rise to a level where he needs to be removed from office? And that's going to be the next phase of this thing. And the House is going to try and get this done before the end of this year, because they would like to see Trump removed from office next year, because that's their strategy to win the White House. And they can say anything they want about it. That is their strategy to win the White House, is to put up whatever wounded candidate they'll have left at the end of the primaries against no Republican opposition. It would be an unprecedented political stunt were they to pull it off. But remember that the Senate is Republican-controlled. And if we're talking about something that may indirectly have helped a president win a presidential election, I think there's going to be a real question in the mind of all Republicans and perhaps a significant number of moderates as to whether or not this amounts to a removable offense. We'll have more on this as it develops, more on the election as it develops, probably more on the election next week. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. It is WMFO Medford on the Town with Mikey D. We'll be here in just a few minutes with everything you need to know about the Boston music scene. But before that, my favorite thing from the past week, the strangest thing from the past week, and a beautiful, beautiful piece of autumn music from Mr. Errol Gardner.
Rubin Scent Fragrance by Helena Rubinstein. Spray it on and heavenly things happen. Heaven Scent. Splash in it. Laugh in it. Live in it. Love in it. You'll find Heaven Scent Fragrance at Helena Rubinstein counters everywhere.
Suddenly, you are all of the things that you want to be. A little bit naughty, but heavenly in Heaven Scent. Heaven Scent.
If you're a single man under the age of 35, you'd probably like to know what the ladies are looking for on an online dating site. A guy who had a few drinks and later got pulled over for buzz driving. See, that could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. And doesn't a guy who's back living with his parents but calls them my roommates just scream, Mr. Right?
Buzzed, busted, and broke. Because buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Everything is awesome.
Medford, 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek with the bad knees with you for another 8 minutes. And then on the towel, Mikey D will be here with everything you need to know about the Boston music scene. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number if you are inclined to call them and request some local music. For now, it is What's Hot. My favorite thing from the past week, and it is Thanksgiving season. And, you know, stuck between Halloween and Christmas, Thanksgiving doesn't really get much love at all. Right? Everybody puts up lights for Halloween. Everybody puts up lights for Christmas. It's all these, like, seasonal flavors and seasonal products that come out for Halloween. You know, you got the chocolate pumpkins, and Christmas you get the chocolate trees and the chocolate Santas. And there's poor little Thanksgiving, just kind of neglected in the middle. So I'm always excited when someone acknowledges the existence of Halloween, or the existence of Thanksgiving, rather. And there are a couple of companies that do that. A favorite product here on the show, the Trader Joe's Thanksgiving turkey and stuffing kettle chips are back on the shelves. These things sell out very quickly when they come in, but they'll be getting shipments through Thanksgiving. We've been enjoying them on the Thanksgiving show here for many years. I highly recommend them. Head down to Trader Joe's. Get some of the turkey and stuffing kettle chips. New for Thanksgiving 2019, the M&M's people have gotten in on the game with white pumpkin pie flavor M&M's. You will find these in finer convenience stores, gas stations, and supermarkets near you. And this is an M&M with a white chocolate center. The flavor is best described as heavy on the nutmeg with sort of a pleasant pie aftertaste. So whether or not you like these is going to depend on whether or not you like nutmeg and you like white chocolate. If that's a good combination for you, then I recommend buying a bag and giving them a try. I found them passable. I prefer dark chocolate. I really don't have much use for white chocolate. I ate a bag of them. I was happy enough to eat the bag of them. I would not turn them down if someone offered them to me, but I also would not go out of my way to seek them out. So I'm not reaching for them, but if that flavor combination works for you, I can tell you it's good, okay? They don't taste vile. They taste good. It's a nice M&M. It's just not a flavor that really works for me. So if you're into white chocolate, if you're into nutmeg, give the M&M's white pumpkin pie flavor a try. And finally, in celebration of Thanksgiving, a shout out to all of my neighbors who have decorated for the holiday. For years, I was the only guy wrapping some lights around the light post and putting up some turkey, illuminated turkey silhouettes in the window. I live on a fairly busy street, and this year I'm noticing that a lot of people around town are throwing orange lights around and throwing some lights up to basically say, hey, happy Thanksgiving. They don't give us anything to work with. There are no Thanksgiving lights other than a handful of turkey silhouettes and a big inflatable turkey. And we know how I feel about the inflatables. But props to everybody who's throwing a little Thanksgiving light into their lives, because it's a nice holiday. You know, let's take a moment and stop and celebrate Thanksgiving before we all go nuts for Christmas. Where's your head at? And we close this week as we do every show. That's a thing that happened. The strangest story from the past week. California. Don't get out to California very often. What happened to turning the other cheek? Police were arresting a man who had been kicked out of a bar in San Diego's Gaslamp District at 1 a.m. on November 1st. That's when Jesus, or someone dressed as Jesus, walked up to one of the arresting officers and sucker punched him in the face. Jesus fled on foot, and his current whereabouts are unknown, at least to San Diego police. Early reports that the trail went cold at the edge of a lake have not been verified. Perhaps the police should try prayer, because Jesus is everywhere. And sometimes just punches a cop in the face. Doesn't seem like a very Jesus thing to do to me. But that's what we got. And I got the thing I don't know. Oh, because I used that. All right. And finally, everything is logged, and finally, everything is good to go. A reminder, the night before Halloween, there will be some sort of a Halloween-een, or no, the night before Thanksgiving. You ever have one of those nights where you just can't keep things straight? Because that is really what's happening to me. The night before Thanksgiving, 3 weeks from tonight, there will be a Thanksgiving-een show. Not sure what it's going to be yet. I'm going to figure that out this weekend, and I will have details on that for you next week. One way or another, I hope you will find it worthwhile to tune in and to spend part of your Thanksgiving holiday as you get ready to welcome guests or brine the turkey or whatever it is you're doing that night. I hope you'll find it worthwhile to spend some time with me. Martin Scorsese has written a piece for the New York Times explaining his comments about Marvel movies. And it's called Martin Scorsese, I Said Marvel Movies Aren't Cinema. Let me explain. If you read only one thing online this week, I strongly suggest that you read this, because we have one of the luminary filmmakers, not just of our generation, but really of any generation, commenting on the state of cinema and the state of the movie industry. And that is always something worth checking out. And he raises some good points. You may disagree. You may agree. I was hoping to talk about that in some depth this week. I think we will get to talking about that in some depth next week, because we are now slipping deeper and deeper into Oscar season, when the really, really good movies come out to play and nobody goes to see them. Because that's just the way it is, right? I don't know why the audience for the big, I don't know if they're big or not, but the audience for the prestige films is never as good as it should be, because some of them are really excellent. Some of them are really worth your time. Some of them are, in fact, pretentious nonsense. Won't mind if you skip those, but go see an Oscar-contending movie. You'll be happy. We'll see you next Thursday night.